Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hello, and welcome to Tales for Life. In each episode of this podcast, we'll explore a folk or fairy tale from a different culture or region and discover the life lessons, values, and morals they offer that we can use today. Join me on the journey through the magical and meaningful world of folk and fairy tales. Welcome to another episode of Tales for Life, the podcast that journeys through life one tale at a time. I'm really glad you're here, whether you're walking, working, or just taking a breath. Thank you for making space for story. And we have a great story today in this episode I've called Words Are Awesome, Deeds Are Better. We love bold words. We admire stirring speeches, brave declarations, and the kind of language that makes us feel like anything is possible. And rightly so. Words can lift us, connect us, even change us. But sometimes, we get swept away by what's said and forget to ask, what's actually been done? We mistake performance for principle, and promises for proof. Because in the end, it's the deed that matters. Whether it's done in the spotlight or in silence, action is what carries weight. Words can be borrowed, rehearsed, even faked. But a deed is earned. It leaves a mark. It changes something. And it tells the truth about who we are. Today's tale comes from Iceland by way of Andrew Lang's Brown Fairy book. It's about two young men who set out in search of honor, one with a mouthful of courage, the other with a heart full of it. The story is called How Gerald the Coward Was Punished. Let's begin. Once upon a time, there lived a poor knight who had a great many children, and found it very hard to get enough for them to eat. One day he sent his eldest son, Rusald, a brave and honest youth, to the neighboring town to do some business, and here Rusald met a young man named Gerald, with whom he made friends. Now Gerald was the son of a rich man who was proud of the boy. For some time Gerald had set his heart on traveling into foreign countries, and after he had been talking for a little while to Rusald, he asked if his new friend would be his companion on his journey. "There is nothing I should like better," answered Rusald, shaking his head sorrowfully. "But my father is very poor, and he could never give me the money." "Oh, if that is your only difficulty, it is all right," cried Gerald. "My father has more money than he knows what to do with, and he will give me as much as I want for both of us. Only, there is one thing you must promise me, Rusald, that, supposing we have any adventures, you will let the honor and glory of them fall to me." "Yes, of course, that is only fair," answered Rusald, who never cared about putting himself forward. As soon as the business was finished, Rusald hastened home. His parents were delighted to hear of his good fortune, and his father gave him his own sword, which was growing rusty for want of use, while his mother saw that his leather jerkin was in order. Full of joy, Rusald rode off, and the next day he and Gerald started off to seek adventures. They had not gone very far into a neighboring kingdom when, riding across a mountain, they caught a glimpse of several armed men hiding amongst some trees in their path, and remembered suddenly some talk they had heard of a band of 12 robbers who lay in wait for rich travelers. It is impossible to fight them. They are 12-2, whispered Gerald, stopping his horse in the path. We had much better ride back and take the lower road. It would be stupid to throw away our lives like this. Oh, we can't turn back, answered Rosald. We should be ashamed to look anyone in the face again. And besides, it is a grand opportunity to show what we are made of. Let us tie up our horses here and climb up the rocks so that we can roll stones down on them. So they went up the rocks silently and carefully. The robbers were lying already, expecting every moment to see their victims coming round the corner a few yards away, when a shower of huge stones fell on their heads, killing half the band. The others sprang up the rock, but as they reached the top, the sword of Rosald swung round, and one man after another rolled down into the valley. At last the chief managed to spring up, and grasping Rosald by the waist, flung away his sword, and the two fought desperately. It seemed as if Rosald, being the smaller of the two, must fall over, when, with his left hand, he drew the robber's sword out of its sheath and plunged it into his heart. Then he took from the dead man a beautiful ring set with a large stone and put it on his own finger. The fame of this wonderful deed soon spread through the country, and people would often stop Gerald's horse and ask leave to see the robber's ring, which was said to have been stolen from the father of the reigning king. And Gerald showed them the ring with pride and listened to their words of praise. And no one would ever have guessed anyone else had destroyed the robbers. In a few days they left the kingdom and rode on to another, where they thought they would stop through the remainder of the winter. But the king would only grant them leave to stop on condition that, before the winter was ended, they should give him some fresh proof of the courage of which he had heard so much. They both bowed low and replied that it was the king's place to command, and theirs to obey. "Well then," said his majesty, "this is what I want you to do. In the northeast part of my kingdom there dwells a giant who has an iron staff 20 yards long. The bravest and strongest young men of my court have fallen under the blows of that staff. But as you overcame the 12 robbers so easily, I feel that I have reason to hope that you may be able to conquer the giant." "We will be ready, your majesty," answered Rosald, but Gerald remained quiet. Very early on the third morning, the two young men started on their journey, and on the fourth day they reached the giant's cave before he was out of bed. Hearing the sound of footsteps, the giant got up and went to the entrance to see who was coming, and Rosald, expecting something of the sort, struck him such a blow on the forehead that he fell to the ground. Then, before he could rise to his feet again, Rosald drew out his sword and cut off his head. "It was not so difficult after all, you see," he said, turning to Gerald, and placing the giant's head in a leathern wallet which was slung over his back, they began their journey to the castle. As they drew near the gates, Rosald took the head from the wallet and handed it to Gerald, whom he followed into the king's presence. "The giant will trouble you no more," said Gerald, holding out the head, and the king fell on his neck and kissed him, and Gerald's heart swelled with pride, and he almost forgot that it was Rosald, and not he, who had slain the giant. By and by, a whisper went round that a beautiful lady who lived in the castle would be present at the feast, with 24 lovely maidens, her attendants. The lady was the queen of her own country, but as her father and mother had died when she was a little girl, she had been left in the care of this king, who was her uncle. She was now old enough to govern her own kingdom, but her subjects said that she must find a husband. Prince after prince had offered himself, but the young queen would have nothing to say to any of them. Now when she heard how the two young men had slain the giant, her heart was filled with admiration of their courage, and she declared that if a feast was held, she would certainly be present at it. And so she was, and when the feast was over she asked the king, her guardian, if he would allow the two heroes who had killed the robbers and slain the giant to fight a tourney the next day with one of her pages. The king gladly gave his consent and ordered the list to be made ready, never doubting that two great champions would be eager for such a chance of adding to their fame. But that night, Gerald did all he could to persuade Rosal to steal secretly out of the castle during the night. For, said he, I don't believe they are pages at all, but well-proved knights. The honor will be all the higher if we gain the day, answered Rosald. But Gerald would listen to nothing. Go he would, and as Rosald had sworn to give him his company, he must come with him. Rosald was much grieved when he heard these words, but he knew that it was useless attempting to persuade Gerald. Suddenly his face brightened. Let us change clothes, he said, and I will do the fighting, while you shall get the glory. Nobody will ever know. And to this Gerald readily consented. Whether Gerald was right or not in thinking that the so-called page was really a well-proved knight, it is certain that Rosald's task was a very hard one. Three times they came together with a crash which made their horses reel, but at length Rosald planted his spear in the armor which covered his adversary's breast and bore him steadily backward. Unhorsed! Unhorsed! Cried the people, and Rosald then himself dismounted and helped his adversary to rise. In the confusion that followed, it was easy for Rosald to slip away and return Gerald his proper clothes. And in these, torn and dusty with the fight, Gerald answered the king's summons to come before him. You have done what I expected you to do, said he, and now choose your reward. Grant me, sire, the hand of the queen, your niece, replied the young man, bowing low, and I will defend her kingdom against all her enemies. She could choose no better husband, said the king, and he turned toward the queen, who had not been present during the fight, but had just slipped into a seat by his right hand. Now the queen's eyes were very sharp, and it seemed to her that the man who stood before her, tall and handsome though he might be, was different in many slight ways, and in one in particular, from the man who had fought the tourney. She answered, You may be satisfied, uncle, but I am not. One more proof I must have. Let the two young men now fight against each other. The man I marry must be the man who killed the robbers and the giant and overcame my page. The tourney was fought, and in spite of Gerald's fears, Rosald managed to hang back to make attacks which were never meant to succeed, and to allow strokes which he could easily have parried to attain their end. At length, after a great show of resistance, he fell heavily to the ground, and as he fell, he knew that it was not alone the glory that was his rightfully which he gave up, but the hand of the queen that was more precious still. But Gerald did not even wait to see if he was wounded. He went straight to the wall where the royal banner waved and claimed the reward which was now his. The crowd of watchers turned toward the queen, expecting to see her stoop and give some token to the victor. Instead, to the surprise of everyone, she merely smiled gracefully and said that before she bestowed her hand, one more test must be imposed, but this should be the last. The final tourney should be fought. Gerald and Rosald should meet singly, two knights of the king's court. And he who could unhorse his foe should be master of herself and of her kingdom. The combat was fixed to take place at 10 o'clock the following day. All night long Gerald walked about his room, not daring to face the fight that lay in front of him, and trying with all his might to discover some means of escaping it. All night long he moved restlessly from door to window, and when the trumpet sounded and the combatants rode into the field, he alone was missing. The king sent messengers to see what had become of him, and he was found, trembling with fear, hiding under his bed. After that, there was no need of any further proof. The combat was declared unnecessary, and the queen pronounced herself quite satisfied and ready to accept Rosald as her husband. You forgot one thing, she said when they were alone. I recognized my father's ring, which one of the 12 robbers had stolen, on the finger of your right hand, and I knew that it was you and not Gerald who had slain the robber band. I was the page who fought you, and again I saw the ring on your finger, though it was absent from his when he stood before me to claim the prize. That was why I ordered the combat between you, though your faith to your word prevented my plan being successful, and I had to try another. The man who keeps his promise at all cost to himself is the man I can trust, both for myself and for my people." So they were married and returned to their own kingdom, which they ruled well and happily. And many years after, a poor beggar knocked at the palace gates and asked for money, for the sake of days gone by. And this was Gerald. While this story might be a bit of an exaggeration, as many tales are, there's no overstating the message it carries, even more than 100 years after it was told. In a world full of noise, it reminds us that what we do matters far more than what we say. But let me say just a few more words about this tale. First, deeds can be done by anyone. Gerald had wealth, status, and every opportunity to shine. But it was Rosald, the poor knight's son, who proved himself. You don't need a title or a platform to do something great. You just need to do it. Second, the value of the deed never goes unnoticed. Rosald's courage showed up again and again, in battle, in loyalty, in quiet strength. Most people were fooled by Gerald's boasting, but the queen saw through it. She noticed the truth behind the action, and she honored it. And third, maybe most importantly, your deeds will reward you in the end. For most of the tale, it looks like Gerald is winning with nothing but words, but the final chapter belongs to Rosald. Truth has a way of rising, even if it takes time. So if you're doing good work and wondering if anyone sees it, keep going. Your moment will come. So this week, speak kindly, but act bravely. Let your words inspire, and let your deeds confirm them. Because in the end, it's not the loudest voice that lasts, it's the truest one. Until next time, thanks for listening to Tales for Life. And keep living your tale.